The Thursday interview
on The Hard Shoulder.
Thanks to Australia's McGuigan Wines, four-time International Winemaker of the Year. This time, bring a McGuigan.
Right, it is time for the Thursday interview here on News Talk. And as I've already told you, and it is indeed my great pleasure to welcome my guest for the evening, Brendan Courtney.
How are you, Brian?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
You're welcome to The Hard Shoulder.
Thank you.
Now, listen, Ivan has done this with hundreds of people over the years, right? I want to do something slightly different. We will talk about you in the way, I'll go into your life and career and outlook on life and philosophy and all the rest of it, right? But I want to open this up with what I call name, rank and serial number.
Very good.
Which is age, weight, height.
So I am 49. I just turned 49 in June. So the big 5-0 is next year. So born in 1971. I'm exactly 80 kgs. So that's just about,
I hate you already,
12 point something stone. I'm about 12 stone, yeah. 12 and a quarter or 12 and a half stone. And what was the last one? I forget already.
Look, height.
Height, 5'11".
Any one of those numbers bother you?
No.
Grant.
Not at all.
That's not out of the way.
In fact, well, I like to stay around 80. That's the number that would bother me. If that goes up, I don't like how my, I don't like how I feel when I don't feel fit.
Okay, so that's from a health conscious point of view rather than a vanity point of view.
It started off as vanity because I didn't do sports when I was a kid and I was kind of a chunky teenager. And I got on this very street into Diggs Lane with Jackie Skelly and yeah. Jane Shortall and got into dance and aerobics at by the age of 17 and got... Of course, 17. It just, I was like a razor then.
I
fell off me. And I also took the stretch and teenage stretch. So I look back at pictures of myself then and I was super skinny. But not, I just did this teenage stretch thing. But yeah, I had a problem with my weight when I was about 13, 14. I remember we moved house. I was about 12 and I was the youngest before my brother was born and spoiled, obviously, and got whatever I wanted. And I remember my aunt coming up and saying, oh, the country air's agreeing with you, piling on the pounds. And I was about 12 and I remember that really vividly and it kind of stayed with me, yeah.
Right. Speaking of where you were born in the Coombe. Mm-hmm. You grew up initially in Coolock and then moved to Tallaght when you were what age?
About eight. Seven or eight, yeah. Just after my Holy Communion.
But you're a proud Tallaght man.
Yeah, well, that's where I went to school. I mean, I remember Coolock quite well because, excuse me, unfortunately, two of my sisters died when we were living in Coolock. Excuse me. You'd rather break wind on air than cough, so forgive me. Sorry about that. I just have a little frog in my throat.
So was that part of the reason for moving from Coolock? There's just too many bad memories, too much heartbreak associated with it.
I would say they would say yes, but my parents have a great story about how they got the house in Coolock. They were living in a flat in Rat Mines. They were pregnant again. They were in their early 20s. They found out mom was pregnant with twins. You know, they're like panic. And they went into an unnamed council in Dublin that should remain unnamed because I don't know the full details of it. But when they went in, they were in arrears. They'd been given the council house in Coolock. It's a really lovely story. They'd been given the council house in Coolock. My mother hated it because she thought it was on the other side of the world. She's from Inchicore. It was two buses to see her mother. But it was a fine three-bedroom house in Coolock on Ballyshannon Road. It was absolutely fine. And how they got on the housing ladder is very interesting. They were in a rent in arrears and they went to see the guy in the council. And he was retiring that day. And he said to my dad, "You look like a nice guy. Give me 500 quid and I'll give you that house." And that's how they got on the property ladder.
Really?
Yeah. Amazing.
People who've just tuned in and don't know much about you will have heard my sister's died and that's all they're thinking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
I
don't really want to pry into the details of it, but I'm just wondering, I know what it is to lose somebody close, a wife, obviously, not a child.
Either side of me, yeah.
Kind of scar does that leave on a family?
Well, it made us very tight, actually. It made us a very, 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 probably a little too close. My dad sort of bundled us all together. And there, there's four of us. There should have been six. And Deborah, who's just a year and a bit older than me, 18 months older than me. She was a twin and Ashley died at 9 months. And then just over a year, I always get these dates confused, obviously, because I was just a baby. And then Orla, who was just a little bit younger than me, died. So, it was very tragic. And we know now why they died. One had a coronary problem and the other baby died of pneumonia. And my parents were 20... 6 and 28 when that happened. So very young and massive scar. And it was something you didn't talk about in the early 70s in Ireland, late 60s, early 70s. And then my mother's a counsellor. She's a psychotherapist and a counsellor.
Okay. Well, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you would have grown up with two parents who were really strong with each other and for each other.
And actually we spoke about the girls all the time.
You were speaking to me as if they're still here, as if they're still part of your family.
They very much are very much part
of
our family.
Which is how long, and how many years later are we talking?
I was a baby, so 48 years ago. Yeah.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, I met somebody the other day and she said, I'm Orla.
Really,
I said,
oh,
I have a sister called Orla. And then I said, oh, I didn't put that in the past tense. And then I said, if I put it in the past tense, I have to explain it. So I just left it. But yeah, Orla was the youngest sister. And I suppose it was a big tragedy in our family. And all of, because my parents were so open, I think, and talked about it. They talked about it to us particularly and told us all about them and we would pray to them. And we would, if we lost something, our toy, we'd pray to them.
That's remarkable, Brendan, because these days, you know, with the way we, mindfulness and the way we take care of ourselves and the way we're supposed to, you know, take care of our emotional and mental health, not bury things and all the rest of it. For a young couple, 40-odd years ago, to instinctively think like that and implement it with their family, there must be amazing people.
My dad's gone now, but they were very progressive. They were very young when they had us as well, you know. And I remember a friend of mine telling me, his mother said, oh, your parents were the young, hip couple that would come to the school, you know, because they were very young when they had us, very young when they got married. Even for their generation, they were still quite young.
I was going to say that. I mean, would they strike me as being what you would call a cool couple. I mean, you probably wouldn't have noticed or recognised it when you were growing up, but looking back now, obviously.
Well, she was a hairdresser and had her own business. And my mother was the first woman in our estate to have her own car. And actually, my father decided to surprise her one Christmas and bought her a Mini. And she came out and she kicked the Mini and said, you can drive that. I'll drive the big car. And so we grew up with this kind of battle for equality constantly around us. And when I came out to them at 19, I knew there was no... I was nervous, obviously, and there was trepidation there. And I was a bit, are they going to react badly? But I was pretty basically self-assured and confident that they would be fine. And they were totally fine.
You're listening to News Talk. I'm joined by Brendan Courtney for the Thursday interview. I know, because I've heard you talk about it many times, you're really, really close to your mother. And obviously you made a television program to do with your father and his last days and how he was treated, etc., which may actually end up changing the law. Well done, you. But did you have a difficult, really difficult phase with your father?
Yeah. He said it was black. I said it was white. Yeah, we just...
Was that just young buck bumping heads with the old buck?
Yeah.
Or was there something deeper?
I don't know. I think that was it. Because the 2 years that he was sick with his stroke, I spent a lot of time with him. And I feel very blessed. I don't even like that word, blessed. I can't think of a better word for it, though. But it was a great gift to get to know him and his sense of humour again. Because I'd lived in London for nearly 12 years on and off, but properly away for a decade, and came back in my late 30s, and then got to know them again. And my brother was born when I was just nearly 17. I was the youngest before him. And so they had a whole new family happened after we left. And so there was a new development that I knew very little of. So I genuinely think when I knew I was gay from about the age of 6, I knew I was different.
Did he know you were different? Did they know you were different?
Everybody knew. I mean, I was a fey little queen. I had a blonde... I mean, my mother was a hairdresser. And I had a blonde page boy. I mean, I regularly was asked in the playground, and Deborah, my sister, would punch them, are you a boy or a girl? Because I'd be screaming or running across. I was just a little fey little boy. I just was.
Did you get bullied for it?
Yes, I did. Really badly in secondary school. Which made me the man I am today. But I was just different. I was just a different little boy. And I always sort of laugh about the sort of judgment within the gay community of slightly camp gays or, you know, just this horrible judgment. I was one of the young kids who couldn't hide it. It was just my personality. I was just who I was. But I never felt unsafe or at home. I always felt, and so I would walk into situations really brave because I had lots of confidence as well. So it was probably a recipe.
You weren't locking yourself in your room going,
no.
God, why me? Please,
I
don't want
then?
This.
It's like, what's wrong with them? I'm fabulous, you know. And I was the youngest of, I was my two older sisters, so they were very protective of me. But I always wonder how it must have looked from the outside. Did my uncles also to give each other knowing little looks, you know, that little one now. Definitely.
So were you always an attention seeker?
I was the only boy and youngest and blonde.
And spoiled rotten.
Yeah, so I suppose, yeah, it goes with the territory, I suppose I was. And funny, I was just talking today to Dublin Youth Theatre and my English teacher in first year or second year was like, you're a mouth, get up to Dublin Youth Theatre. And so I'm an alumni of Dublin Youth Theatre. I was on the stage from 14 to sort of 19 in Dublin Youth Theatre, yeah.
The reason I wanted to ask about conflict with your father, an awful lot of successful men have very difficult relationships with their fathers. So how long did your difficulties last?
Until he had his stroke, really, until he got really sick.
Pretty much most of your adult life, that's
yeah, it. It was a difficult relationship. I loved him and he loved me. I mean, that's the one thing, any interview I've ever done about my family, I'm not a parent, and so I don't know the pressures of it and I never assume to. But what I do know as a child of people who struggled, the one thing we all had was we knew we were loved unquestionably. Mm. We really knew that. And when you look back as an adult, look, but that was the gift that I got that many of my friends didn't get. And when we talk about their childhood experiences. So even though he probably knew I was a little bit different, he was very protective. And now that I can look back as a man, as an adult, I see how kind and good he was. That's hard to see at yeah. your late teens and your early 20s when he doesn't disagree with your choices often or doesn't agree with, you know, I mean, we literally would fight like cat and dog for all of my...
Anything. He'd say black, you say white.
Oh, anything, yeah.
Or did he have different philosophical outlooks? Did he just believe in different
religious.
Things?
He's very religious, my father. He went to Mass. In fact, he went to Mass every Sunday, and one Christmas we got him a set of walkie-talkies because we wouldn't go to Mass, so he held the walkie-talkie at Mass and we held it on the mantelpiece so we could hear Mass. And he was going, breaker, breaker, are you listening? And we were like, we're listening. So we could hear Mass. But I had great... And
did his religious beliefs colour his outlook on your lifestyle?
No. No, because he felt the best way to change anything was from the inside out. And so he listened to me and he accepted me when he understood where I was coming from. But he did listen, and that was key to him. That's what I really respect about him. But yeah, you're just making me think now. I hadn't really thought about that. Yeah, we were at loggerheads for like most of my adult life.
The reason I'm asking this question is because you're high functioning, you're an overachiever, and I'm just wondering how much of that...
It's like the best school report ever from Mark Cagney.
...of that motivation came from your loggerheads with him, and I'm either have to live up to him or I'm going to prove him wrong or I'm going to prove I'm better. And the reason I asked for that is because I had I had the same difficulties with my father.
Mm.
And I am, 64 next month? He's gone well over 20 years now, and I'm still looking for his approval.
Wow.
You know, so I'm just wondering, and I've spoken to other people with similar sorts of father-son relationships, and I'm just wondering, was that a motivator? In other words, it's part of the reason Brendan Courtney is the person he is today, professionally, down to his father and going...
I never looked for his approval. I decided when I was about 17 that I couldn't ask for people's approval.
I'm obviously much needier than you then.
Yeah. No, I didn't look for his approval, actually. Yeah. And I watched my father struggle with his business. Past the age of about 12, 13, his business failed and he lost his shirt, and he was doing very well. We'd moved. They bought a house in Talla, a nice house and a nice estate. And my mum had her own business. She had a salon and it was doing really, really well. And he had a building business. And then the 80s happened and he was part of that recession and he was really badly hit. And I saw his dignity be really damaged and his pride be really hurt. And I saw him overvalue his pride than the necessity to succeed. And I decided that wasn't going to happen to me. I decided that whatever...
So he bit his nose off to spite his face?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I think he did. I think sometimes he had this ego and male pride thing that would make him walk away from a job or underprice himself.
Would he have viewed that as dignity rather than pride?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely he would have. And
And he'd have died rather than sacrifice that,
I think
he?
So, yeah. I really do. When you are an outsider from the get-go, dignity is a plus. Yeah. You don't look for it.
Oh, that's interesting. You've always felt that you were an outsider rather than, because a lot of people who live alternative lifestyles, and some of them had a really, really hard time coming out, living up to it. They still have difficulty dealing with it. And some of them have viewed it as, well, do you know what? I was kind of special from the start. I was always different and I wanted to be different. And I'm glad I'm not the same as everybody else.
Yeah, no, I feel...
Didn't view themselves as outsiders, view themselves as special.
I've seen the change. I've seen society change towards me, and I'm much more comfortable with how society views me now, because that just makes my day-to-day existence easier. But I was an outsider. I mean, I just was. And I was, you know, when I came out and I was going to gay bars, we would sneak out because you could be arrested for being gay. It was still illegal in Ireland. And I was 19, 20, 21. You know, I was living my life.
So, I remember the year I came to Dublin, actually, the Fairview Park thing happened.
Yeah.
That poor young man got beaten to death by a gang, and they got away with it, effectively.
Yes, I think that a sense of other, I think the real gift of that is you go through a self-loathing phase, which is when you start having sexual urges and they're different to everybody else and you're wondering what the hell's going on, why you're so different and why, you know, everything is just different and wrong and you hate yourself for a long, long time. And then one day you kind of work through it and you wake up, and because of the foundation of love and support you have at home particularly, and because I went to kind of a lefty kind of interesting school that was new and the young teachers and sort of there was a support there, and I was never vilified by adults ever, only by bullies. So I knew they were idiots anyway. You have this process, and I always say that myself and my female friends sort of post children and post empty nest, and I've very few of my straight friends have had it till way later in life, is a self-realization where you actually look at yourself, accept yourself, and actually like yourself. And that's a real gift that only certain situations can force you into. And it can go left or right. You could go, I hate myself and I'm going to continue to hate myself. And I know people who live alternate lives who do hate themselves and loathe themselves and are from cultures like where they're not accepted and it just goes inside and eats them. But I learned to like myself. That sounds really washy-wishy.
No.
I learned to like myself and I learned to go, actually, if you don't like me, I don't care because you're wrong and I'm right. And this is my life. And if you judge me for my life, I don't care what you think.
I had a very wise old auntie used to say, if you can get to the stage where you can look at yourself in the mirror, warts and all, and forgive the warts and be happy with the good bits, then you know what, you'll probably be all right.
And that was really about who I was, what I represented. And then imagine the marriage referendum. I had to go back to the housing estate I was from because they had very poor figures and knock on the doors. And the people that I decided at 17 that I didn't care what they think, I had to go and ask for their approval. That really stuck in my craw.
Were you surprised by the outcome and the size of it, the margin of it?
Yeah, I was.
I wasn't.
I was really happy, and I mean, there was...
Do you know why? And I'll tell you why, Brendan, because it wasn't actually anything to do with... well, it was, of course, to do with equality, but I actually think underneath it all was love.
Yeah.
Was every one of us has somebody they love who's different, and they want them to be treated exactly the same as they are.
Yeah, I was surprised, because we've been so disappointed by referendums.
Do you know that we have gone for nearly half an hour?
No!
And I haven't even scratched the surface.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to have to leave it at that. Brendan Cordy, such a pleasure. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
Absolutely.
That's our lot for today's edition of The Hard Show. Our final winner of the fabulous hamper of McGuigan's Wine and Sheridan's Jesus D. Carey of Malahide in County Dublin, who knew, of course, that the Kinks were singing Sunny Afternoon. My thanks to the production team, Aisling Moore, Dan Flanagan, Roisin Davis, Alex Russo and Sonia Tutty. Michael Quillingan and Paul Murnick were on sound. Off the Ball is up next. I'll be back tomorrow at 4 here on News Talk. Bye.